Hello, and welcome to the Storyteller's Mission with Zena Del Lowe, a podcast for artists and storytellers about changing the world for the better through story. Since the beginning of the year, we've been in a series about how to find a good story, the idea being making your story good before Hollywood. However, now I want to turn to another important question. And so for the next 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to unpack a different aspect of whether or not your story is good. And this time the question is your story good before God? In other words, I want you to look at your own story and ask yourself, do you have a clear conscience before God? Do you feel that your story is ultimately good for the world? Now, some of you might not be interested in exploring this question, and I understand. However, for those of you who are open to being challenged on this front, then I would like to present to you the first of 5 markers or keynotes to godly storytelling. Keynote number 1, we must have a commitment to truth-telling. Most Christians out there call something good as long as it lacks sex, language, or violence, as if that is what we should ultimately be striving for. And there are many reasons why I would object to this, one of the most obvious being that a story is not good because of what it lacks. It's good because of what it offers. And insofar as a story tells the truth about the world as God actually created it, it is good. However, I do understand where this standard originated from. It was born out of concern for the types of entertainment that now seem to populate the airways. Entertainment where sex and language and violence are gratuitously portrayed. However, I would like to suggest something radical here. Namely, that it is not that these stories show too much. Rather, they show too little. For example, take the show Friends, which is mild by many of today's standards, and yet you have characters who are fairly sexually promiscuous. Now, I actually don't mind that part because you know what? I live in a society where people are fairly sexually promiscuous. But what individuals in our society experience that the characters in the show Friends didn't are the consequences of our sexual choices. Sexual promiscuity is actually the norm in today's world. And in the show Friends, there were very few, if any, real consequences presented for that behavior. And by the way, I'm not talking about showing characters being punished for their actions. That's not at all what I mean. And that's not at all the way God works, by the way, or else we would all be screwed. I'm talking about the fact that as human beings, it hurts us. It takes its toll on us spiritually. It hurts us even if we don't know that it's hurting us, even if we don't know God. Which leads me to a story about a gal named Tina. And when I met Tina, she was not a Christian. She knew nothing about God. She did not grow up in a home that taught her anything about God. And yet she became a Christian in her early 20s. Why? Well, for Tina, it was because she was engaged in sex with her boyfriend like everyone else her age, and yet she didn't feel right about it. Every time they had sex, it made her want to cry. Now, she'd never heard a word about saving herself for marriage or any of the stuff that Christians talk about. So when she heard a Christian talking about the real ideal of marriage from God's point of view, all of a sudden, a light bulb went off in her head, and it all made sense to her. Everything that she was experiencing, the guilt, the shame, the regret, it all made sense. There was an actual, genuine answer to her very human experiences. The truth of the matter is, in real life, most of us don't, in fact, feel liberated by sex, contrary to what the world tells us. No, you talk to all the women and the men who have had multiple sexual partners, and most of us don't feel good about it. We feel used, exploited. It makes us feel needy, afraid, or empty and disconnected and alone. We wonder why we can't connect with other people. We wonder what's wrong with us. So in the show Friends, it's not that the writers showed too much, it's that they showed too little. Aside from Rachel finally getting pregnant with Ross's child, there were really no consequences for any of that behavior. Of course, part of the problem is that many of the people writing that show probably didn't even know that there was an issue that they were missing. They might not even realize the impact that their behaviors are having on them. Or if they do, they chalk it up to some other character defect or quirk on their own part that they're supposed to just get over. Just take a look at Anne Hathaway, for example, who said she cried every day on a particular film that she was working on when she had to do a sex scene. Now, the truth is, Anne cried because what she was doing on camera was a violation to her. But even Anne couldn't articulate this or even grasp the spiritual implication of this violation. She ultimately tried to explain it away as her being outside her comfort zone. She said that she wasn't overtly sexual by nature, and so she thinks that's why it upset her so much. But I believe it's because when actors engage or reenact sexual scenes like this on the big screen, it has an impact on their body, not just on a physiological level, but also on an emotional and a spiritual one. And yet, they're unaware of it. And yet they're not, because her tears were the justifiable response to the spiritual impact that this thing was having. Only she couldn't see that because of what is being espoused in our society. But she was experiencing it. Just this week, I read another article about Salma Hayek, who talked about how devastating her first on-screen sex scene was in the film Desperado, which is what made her famous. Now, the producers and the director actually attempted to be respectful to her. They cleared the set. They made sure that no unessential personnel were present. Even so, they had to keep stopping filming because she kept crying throughout the whole thing. Now, here's the interesting part. She couldn't actually explain her discomfort except to say that she was worried what her dad would think. In her mind, it was all wrapped up in her dad. But what I believe is that she was failing to recognize her own humiliation and shame because of the impact that this act was taking on her own body. And the fact that she was being used like an erotic piece of furniture. I honestly think she wasn't even aware of her own shame in that moment. Because you know what? Society tells us that it's normal, that sexuality is good and wonderful, and it is. But when it's outside the boundaries that God designed for us, it can have devastating consequences on our psyche. Now, Anne Hathaway said, well, it's just an occupational hazard. And this is where a Christian storyteller ought to come along. Not by squelching the truth, but by telling the whole story. Because sometimes we end up telling lies when we leave out these things. As Barbara Nicolosi so aptly said, I would rather see an R-rated truth than a G-rated lie. So it's not that showing sex or promiscuity or hate or rage or contempt or murder or stealing or any of those things is actually bad. It's that if we show it, we need to show all of it. Everything that is true about that behavior or those emotions and how it is destroying the person themselves. And then all of a sudden, when we do that, we're not guilty of telling a lie. We're telling the real truth. Truth that is transformative. Truth that has the power to actually save. To help people see what's really going on with their own life, in their own world, in their own bodies. Just like my friend Tina, who encountered the doctrine of sexual purity and it literally changed her life. See, what happens when people are committed to a story where it lacks sex or language or violence, these stories just can't get deep because they have these artificial constructs around them telling them what they can't do rather than what they can do. And not just what they can do, but what they ought to do, which is to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. And that means telling the truth about the consequences. That's how you have a story with substance. Oh, and by the way, we're talking about stories coming out of Hollywood and how so many people are upset by the content. But here's a freebie for you. Most of these stories actually affirm a biblical Christian worldview. And you're thinking, what? No, it doesn't. And I'm saying, yeah, actually, it does. If you really look at it, it's shocking how most of the stories end up illustrating a biblical Christian worldview by affirming the values that Christians ought to affirm. Virtues such as honesty, loyalty, self-sacrifice, courage are venerated as good. Vices like lying and cheating or jealousy, anger and lust, these are almost universally characterized as being bad. There are so many stories. In fact, a majority of the stories in our society from both novels and film condemn evil and recognize evil as evil. Bad guys are condemned for doing bad things. Good guys are praised for doing the right thing, especially when it's hard for them to do it. Further, there are so many stories with a heroic character struggling to overcome the evil in this world, and not just the outward evil, but also the darkness inside their own soul. They're struggling with their own sin nature and inner demons. If we can't relate to that, who can? Really, who better to explain this reality than Christians? We're the ones who can offer the best explanation for what people are actually experiencing in this world. We are the ones who understand that we feel guilty because we are guilty. We understand that we are internally divided, that our nature is naturally rebellious and broken, and yet that we have inherent dignity because we've been created in the image of God. But we are not, in fact, the only ones capable of telling the truth about human beings as we are. In point of fact, as I just mentioned, most of the stories being told today touch on these very same truths. They have to touch on these truths if they have any hope of resonating with people, because people know the truth deep in their hearts. We have it written in our DNA. So this means that even non-Christians can tell stories that God approves. Because the first keynote to godly storytelling is a commitment to truth-telling. And all truth is ultimately God's truth. All truth leads to God. You don't even need to mention God. As long as the story is true about the human experience, that's all you need. And you can trust that it has the potential of directing someone to God. The fact of the matter is, the best storytellers I know are committed to telling the truth, whether they're Christians or not. Because these are the people that are looking deeper into themselves to see what is true in their own being. And they're trying to reflect that truth. And they're probably doing it more honestly than most Christians, because most Christians tend to be afraid of what they're going to see if they're too honest with themselves. If they admit the darkness that they have, they're afraid. They're afraid of being shunned or rejected or judged or condemned, abandoned, and cast out. And you know what? They're not wrong. I'm convinced that this is one reason why there's such a big problem in the church today, because there is no place for people to go to confess their sins and get the help they need to actually overcome their struggles. One reason is because we're all sort of trying to out-spiritualize each other. Or maybe we simply don't care enough to invest in somebody else's journey. Perhaps this is why I wasn't as shocked or surprised as I wish I could have been when all the stuff about Rabbi Zacharias came out. This is a man that has been touted by many, including myself, as being the best Christian apologist since C.S. Lewis. And yet, this is a man who apparently struggled with terrible, heinous sexual sin. And he's responsible for that. But I have to wonder how much of that struggle was magnified by the fact that there was no one safe for him to talk to confess his sins or be real with. I mean, we've kind of created a superstar environment where teachers like Rabbi are put on a pedestal And the pressure of perfection prevents them from being honest with others about who they really are and what they're struggling with. Now, of course, this is pride, and that's ugly too. And our own pride is an insidious thing. Because at the end of the day, we want people to look up to us and admire us, don't we? It's an ugly part of our nature. But there's another part to it too, which is that we're also afraid to be seen. Because at the end of the day, we also know that another one of our great temptations as a human being is the temptation to compare ourselves to others in order to justify ourselves. So in a sick kind of way, we love hearing about other people's sins, not because we want to help them or care about them or support them in their journey towards recovery, and not because we feel their pain or we've been there too, or because it makes us feel less isolated, but because it makes us feel more righteous than them. Ooh, I look pretty next to that. And so we cultivate an environment that makes it really, really difficult for people to be real. Those of us who have struggled with real sins, such as myself, even if we've gotten past that sin of pride that makes us want to stay shiny and pretty in the eyes of everyone else we know, well, we often still feel trapped because we live in fear that if anybody knew the truth, they would reject us. And you know what? In many cases, it is true. There are very few people who stand with you when you finally come clean of all the bad things, all the secret sins, everything that you've kept hidden for your whole life, those shameful things that you've been terrified for others to see. Your fear is justified. And yet, for myself, coming clean in the face of that potential reality was the best thing that ever happened to me. Even though it ended up leaving me with relatively few people in my life. Because what I realized is that having those people's approval and making sure that they saw me in a good light was actually an idol for me. And I was enslaved by fear of discovery or the fear of abandonment or the fear of rejection. And fear is a very horrible place to live. But then, once my worst fears came true, well, there was a freedom in that. I no longer had to be a slave to fear because they'd already come true. What could possibly hurt me now once my worst fears had come true? And I'm convinced that that's exactly what God needed to do to remove my idols. Probably to prepare me for what I'm doing right now. All that to say, the very first keynote of a story that pleases God is to commit yourself to truth-telling. You must tell the truth. But of course, that does lead to some difficulty, doesn't it? Because we must not cause our audience harm. But that's something we will unpack next week. For now, I truly hope this episode has challenged you in some way. And if it has, will you consider reaching out to me and letting me know? I would love to hear from you, actually, no matter what you have to say. One of the best ways that we become truth tellers is to practice sharing our own stories with others. So if you have a story to tell, or if you have any thoughts or concerns or feedback about anything that I've said today, send me an email to Zena@thestorytellersmission.com or click on the link provided in this week's episode notes. My email is safe and private. I will be the only one who reads it, and I would love to hear from you. I really would. Until then, I want to thank you for listening to The Storyteller's Mission with Zena Dello. May you go forth inspired to change the world for the better through story.